Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
I want to begin today with a conversation around medical assistance in dying. So it's been 7 years now since this became legal in Canada, and that followed a Supreme Court of Canada decision that struck down the previous criminal prohibition of medical assistance in dying. Now, Canada is on the cusp of some pretty major changes to the criteria around medical assistance in dying. So I think it's important that we understand what the reality in Canada has become. And what is it that we're opening the door to? So we've got new data, new numbers. Now, each of these numbers represents an individual. Each of these numbers represents an individual's choice to utilize, to make use of, access to medical assistance in dying. So these numbers have risen. So last year, 2022, according to Health Canada, 13,241 people died. Made use of medical assistance in dying. Since 2016, the total number is 44,958. The 2022 numbers represent an increase of 31.2% over the year before. In fact, medical assistance in dying, those deaths accounted for 4.1% of all deaths in Canada in 2022. So what do we make of that? Well, joining us for some thoughts is someone who has been watching all of this unfold very closely and has some concerns about perhaps the path we're on here. Trudell Lemons is a professor and school chair in health, law, and policy, the Faculty of Law, University of Toronto. Professor Lemons, great to have you with us here. Welcome to the program.
Good afternoon, Rob.
When we look at these numbers, how should we make sense of that? I mean, or how should we view that in your view?
Well, it depends really on the position that you take to this, but I would say it's hard to deny that we have a stunning number of assisted deaths in the country. So in other countries, they refer to this as euthanasia-assisted suicide. Most of our cases are cases of euthanasia. So in a period of 5-6 years, we actually have bypassed the most liberal regimes in the world, particularly Belgium and the Netherlands. We're more or less on average in Canada as a whole at the level of the Netherlands, but we're bypassing Belgium. In terms of the proportion of people who die by medical assistance and dying. And it's a very rapid increase, and an increase which I would say clearly indicates that this is not the kind of exceptional procedure that even if you read the Supreme Court decision in Carter, when they were talking about the fact that there was a need, that so they said an absolute prohibition on euthanasia-assisted suicide is unconstitutional, but they emphasized that in exceptional circumstances, as in the case that they had in before them, they felt that there had to be some form of access to assisted dying provided by a physician or help by a physician to die. And I would say if you have close to 5% now of the percentage of people who die by assisted dying, it's no longer an exceptional procedure. So that I think is clear. Another thing that I would say is striking is the huge disparities or the differences between the different provinces. Mm-hmm. So if you take Quebec, for example, 6.6% of people now die by medical assistance in dying. British Columbia, you have 5.5%. These are, in terms of jurisdictions, the highest percentages in the world. We have other provinces like Alberta, where it's where it's much lower, where we're at 2.6%, which is in and of itself already high compared to, say, the assisted suicide regimes that we have in the United States and New Zealand and Australia. But it's clearly significantly lower in Alberta and in Saskatchewan and in Manitoba than in Quebec and BC. So some people say, oh, it's just a question of you know, being having access to it and people choosing this.
Right.
But if you look at the criteria of the law still requires that the person has to have an irremediable medical condition that causes intolerable suffering, and there must be an irreversible decline of capabilities. And these are access criteria, but also safeguards. My question then immediately is there so significantly more irremediable medical illness that, in other words, that cannot be dealt with adequately? Is there so much more intolerable suffering in Quebec and BC than in Alberta and Saskatchewan? So from my perspective, from somebody who works on the regulation of professional practices and who has cautioned about an all too easy expansion of this practice, I think it's worrisome.
Should we be surprised by these increases? We go back in 2017, for example, there was about 2,800 cases of medical assistance in dying. It's now over 13,000. That is a significant increase, but is this maybe what we should have expected?
I have to state up front that I supported the original legislation, which was a response to a Supreme Court decision. Mm-hmm. I argued, even as an expert witness for the government in the Quebec Trouchon case and in a BC case, that there was reason why you would want to have as a safeguard end-of-life situation. So in other words, that this is an exceptional procedure that is meant to facilitate the dying process and people who are in, you know, approaching their death.
Yeah.
Now the government has expanded that, and I would say even under the previous law, we had as a criteria, which was supposed to be a safeguard, a reasonable foreseeable natural death. So people had to be approaching their natural death, but it was already interpreted so widely that we've seen people receiving medical assistance and dying in sometimes troubling circumstances. Of intersecting poverty, problems with accessing timely care, and people giving up. And so I'm not saying that these are the majority of cases, but it's clear that we have a stunning increase, which is associated with flexible interpretation of already broad criteria. We now have an expansion outside of the end-of-life context.
Yeah.
We also have as a unique rule, because there is no liberal, so Belgium and Netherlands are the other, I would say, the two other major liberal regimes out there. They require that physicians agree that there are no other medical options left. In Canada, somehow we have turned medical assistance in dying into something that is available, even if other medical options are available, but people may not access them because there may be wait times or people refuse them for often reasons that are unclear because... when we're dealing with significant illness and disability, people are often unsure. People may be giving up too quickly. So instead of the medical professionals being obliged to say to patients, well, I can't give access to that unless there is no other medical option left. Here in Canada, we've introduced in the law, and the government has been warned about that, Parliament has been warned about that, we have introduced a rule that people can refuse all forms of care and still insist of having medical assistance and dying.
One of the numbers in this Health Canada report that stands out, so there were 463 cases last year, so that's 3.5% of the total, where the person's natural death was not reasonably foreseeable. And you alluded to this in terms of the criteria as it's been laid out. And as we expand that criteria, I imagine that number would rise. So what do we make of the increasing proportion of cases where natural death is not reasonably foreseeable?
Yeah, so yes, indeed. I mean, it's an important thing. So last year, we didn't have a full year where the law allowed medical assistance outside of the end-of-life context, and we had 2.2% of 10,000. Now we have 3.5% of 13,000, which is several hundreds of people who normally under without this medical assistance dying provision, most of them would likely have been alive. And so these are now dead. I mean, is it because they were suffering unbearably? Obviously, that's the, that are the access criteria. But if you then look also at some of the reasons why people receive medical assistance in dying, there are broad categories. For example, there's a category which in the Health Canada report is stated as made for other conditions. And this is, I would say, for me, a red flag that we see in there, frailty, 25% of people who receive this for other conditions. And actually, I have to clarify, so 17% out of the 13,000 people, so 17 out of 13,000 received medical assistance in dying for other conditions than, say, cancer, heart condition, and so on. So we have in that broad category, frailty, 25%, diabetes, 11%, chronic pain, osteoarthritis, osteoporosis, fractures, vision and hearing loss, frequent falls. So many things actually that people who are elderly often suffer from. Now, in Belgium and the Netherlands, and again, this is something I testified about in the Truchon case, I testified about how in Belgium, at one point they started seeing increasing numbers of people who were receiving euthanasia, who were not approaching their death, and who were characterized as having polypathology, and it's the same other conditions, general frailty. And I would say in Belgium as well, but I would say the same. So I agree with the commentators in Belgium who said this sounds like a medicalization of old age. Yeah. We're starting to say to elder people, here you have medical assistance in dying. You suffer from all these difficult things in your life. So we're sending the message in a way, your life is terrible. We can offer you a way to out of your suffering.
It's interesting. So starting in March, this is when the criteria expands. So would include those who are suffering from mental illness. Now, there's a lot of concern about how far we're going. Last week, all parties in the House of Commons agreed to recall a special joint committee that's going to provide some further oversight. So what do you make of the pace we're going at here and what we might be opening the door to come March of next year?
Yes. So unlike the government, which has supported this expansion outside of the in the context of mental health, so when people with mental health as a sole condition will have access to medical assistance dying, unlike the government and some and an official advisory committee that it set up, which said that this will only be in exceptional cases, I would say there is nothing in the law that clarifies that this will only be given when all other forms of treatment have been tried out and people have been suffering for years from mental illness. It will be broadly available, and it will really be driven, I fear, by potential individual psychiatrists who perhaps well-meaning, but who have this vision that this is what people with mental illness should have access to as a form of relief of suffering. And many in the mental health community, many mental health care providers are really concerned that this will lead, and this has happened in Belgium and Netherlands, not in huge numbers, but again, in Belgium and Netherlands, the law is more severe because physicians have to agree that there are no other medical options left, which hasn't been interpreted in this way in the Canadian context. So we will have people who are maybe applying because of severe depression, schizophrenia, post-traumatic stress disorder, perhaps even persons, although this is debated whether this is should be constructed as a mental illness, but people with autism, cognitive disabilities, name it. Mm-hmm. Broad category of people who are struggling with mental illness and who may feel wrongly often because mental health care, if mental health care is available, most of them will recover. They may wrongly perceive themselves as being without hope and may be applying for MAID, and it will depend on who they will be seeing, whether they will be receiving MAID or not.
We'll see where this all goes from here. Professor Lemons, appreciate your insight on all of this. Thanks so much for joining us here this afternoon.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
There you go. That is Trudell Lemons, professor and school chair in health law and policy, the Faculty of Law, University of Toronto. So some thoughts on these numbers that we have now today from Health Canada, kind of where this whole debate is going. It feels like maybe we're going too far too fast. I get that each case is an individual, an individual decision. And maybe there's some level of indifference that the rest of us should feel, like should we have a preference that the number should be this or that? And that's what I mean by indifference. But the fact that they've risen so dramatically is something we should be cautious about as we move forward. Is there really that much more suffering today than there was in 2017 or 2018? Or is there really more suffering in some provinces than in others? So what do we make of those increases and those differences? But at the end of the day, I mean, yeah, I agree. I mean, the criminal prohibition on medical assistance in dying was wrong, and it was cruel, and it was proper that it be struck down. Dying with dignity should be an option available to people. I had a text here from someone who says, thank heavens for mate. I give my husband the dignity and peace of mind of choosing when he was to die. He had terminal cancer, right? And it's hard to see how anyone would or could object to that. And I don't think that's what we're talking about when we talk about going too far. But I do wish maybe our politicians would be more cautious in how we approach this. So, yes, medical assistance in dying should exist. That should be an option. But maybe we need to be a little more cautious with the parameters we're putting around this.
Canada may be known for its landscapes and friendly people, but beneath the surface lies a darker side of crime, history, and the paranormal. Since 2017, the award-winning Dark Poutine podcast has explored the shadowy corners of the Great White North and beyond, delivering chilling tales from a uniquely Canadian perspective. Hosted by Mike Brown and Matthew Stockton, with over 300 episodes and fresh releases every Monday, Dark Poutine is your weekly ticket to the creepier side of Canada. Listen to Dark Poutine on Apple, Spotify, Amazon Music, or wherever you get your podcasts.